Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're having a great discussion about plausible strategies for natural prevention and treatment of coronavirus. We're talking to an expert, Lee Zauschuler, is a naturopathic physician who's focused on naturopathic oncology. She's really brought a wealth of expertise to and precision to the study of how natural agents work in cancer. And because of the COVID-19 crisis, she's turned her attention to coronavirus. She's written a great paper where's it published? Has it been published yet?
Yes, it's published in Explore, and it's in the March 2020. It's called Integrative Considerations During the COVID-19 Pandemic, and myself and my co-authors are listed there.
Yeah, along with Andrew Weil, you are the lead author. Okay, great. So let's do a kind of a review of some of the plausible nutritional agents that we can deploy. So where do you want to start? You want to start with just the alphabet vitamins, and then we'll get into some of the more esoteric nutrients?
Sure, that sounds good. So alphabet, okay, I guess that alphabet starts with A, so we'll start with vitamin A. You know, I think vitamin A certainly has a potential role to play in increasing the antiviral capacity of our body. Vitamin A has long been used, actually, as an antiviral, at least in naturopathic medicine. It appears to have an immune regulatory function and modifies some of the molecules, the cytokines that the immune system, immune cells secrete in their immune defenses. It is interesting because one of the places where vitamin A is most active is in the gastrointestinal tract. And that's actually very directly relevant to COVID-19. As we know, the virus that causes COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2, binds to ACE2 receptors to gain entry into the cell. And ACE2 receptors are found throughout the body, but in especially high concentration throughout the gastrointestinal tract. This is one of the reasons why it's thought that one of the mechanisms of entry is not just through the lungs, but through the digestive tract. And one of the most important defenses that we have immunologically in the digestive tract is an immunoglobulin called secretory IgA. And secretory IgA is secreted by our intestinal cells as a way to recognize and bind to and eliminate potential toxins or infectious organisms or infected cells. And vitamin A actually helps the secretory IgA to be more active in our digestive tract.
So it helps protect all the mucous membranes, but you know, nasal passages, the throat, the sinuses, even the genital membranes depend on secretory IgA to some extent for defense.
Yes, exactly. So I think from that way, vitamin A could help us with that initial defensive reaction to this virus. You know, the challenge with vitamin A is that it can create some toxicity in the liver. it doesn't happen with everybody. We don't actually know yet who is predisposed to this, and it typically doesn't happen unless people are taking large doses, like over 100,000 IUs or 300,000 IUs for a period of time. That being said, I have seen this elevation of liver enzymes or liver function tests, as we say, which is an indication of this liver damage in people, even as in doses as low as 10,000 IUs a day. So that's rare, but I would say that there's a little bit of a caution. So going back to that benefit versus risk, I think vitamin A has potential benefit, but anybody with coexisting liver disease, regular high alcohol intake,
pregnancy,
should not do vitamin A.
Also, you know,
normal, healthy person, potentially.
On that theory, you know, it was thought that one of the plausible strategies for helping kids with measles, particularly in underdeveloped countries where there's a lot of mortality from measles, was to give them a whopping dose of vitamin A. And they tested that hypothesis in one study that I looked at, and it didn't work. It wasn't beneficial.
Right.
In fact, it was slightly harmful. So, you know, I would say, if you're deficient in vitamin A, optimize your vitamin A, but don't think of like mega dosing vitamin A, as your, bulwark against all misfortune, because it, as a standalone, it may not do the trick. Skipping over the vitamin Bs because they're important, but, you know, they may, we may want to talk a lot about vitamin C because there's a lot of buzz on vitamin C. In fact, some doctors in New York are routinely, and this is unusual for hospital practice, they're routinely throwing a little vitamin C in the bag when they give patients intravenous fluids, patients who are very sick. I mean, it used to be, man, you'd have to beg for a little vitamin C in your IV. I mean, when I broke my hip a couple years ago and I said, yeah, put a little vitamin C in the IV bag, they said, really? That's not substantiated. I said, look, what's it going to hurt? You know, put a little in. What do you say in relationship to this?
Yeah, I like the idea of vitamin C. I have to say, you know, we've long known that vitamin C supports immune function. I think the average American has some awareness of that. And, even oral doses of vitamin C in fairly low doses, 500 milligrams, will increase especially the activity of neutrophils, which are part of the adaptive immune system and something that needs to be activated in kind of we'll call it the mid phase of this viral infection. The effect of vitamin C when we take it orally isn't very long lived, so there is probably some rationale to taking vitamin C on a regular basis throughout the day, maybe every 3 or 4 hours. And, you know, even 500 milligrams, if you don't have an infection, is sufficient. From what I can tell, if people are infected, their need for vitamin C goes up and they can tolerate a lot more orally. And the interesting thing about vitamin C is that when we think about where vitamin C occurs in nature, it occurs in foods complexed with flavonoids that I mentioned earlier. And as a complex, vitamin C and these flavonoids, things like hesperidin, naringenin, they all together are very potent anti-inflammatory compounds. So vitamin C appears to have some anti-inflammatory activity and has been shown, at least in cells, to specifically inhibit this particular pathway of inflammation in the COVID-19 infection, something called NLRP3, which is a whole bunch of gobbledygook, but basically to know that there is potentially some very specific, a specific role for vitamin C in COVID-19. We know from other clinical trials that when people have viral infections that can cause pneumonia and they take vitamin C, they're less likely to develop pneumonia. So that is suggestive that might also be true for this infection, you know, albeit we don't have the studies yet. But I think vitamin C is certainly something to put on the short list.
And then there are really sort of two levels of this. On the one hand, there's, you know, the oral supplementation or maybe throwing a, you know, 1,500 milligrams in an IV bag. And then there are those who advocate for much higher doses of vitamin C, 25, 30, 40, 50 1,000 milligrams in an IV, with the idea being that vitamin C may exert a direct destructive effect on viruses. And I think that proposition is being investigated to some extent in China. I don't see much work on that in the United States. But, you know, we in the field of integrative medicine, we've been using high-dose intravenous vitamin C for conditions like mono and Epstein-Barr virus and hepatitis and herpes. for you know, as long as I've been in practice, this has been something that's been advocated.
Right, and just like you said, have my eyes on those trials, which I know are underway in China for the most part, and am very curious to see. I suspect that if I had to hedge bets, I suspect that we're going to find that, just as you mentioned earlier, intravenous vitamin C as a sole agent is not going to do the trick, but that it may be a very good adjuvant to other therapies.
Mm-hmm. And we have to be careful with patients who have failing lungs and failing kidneys, because all that fluid and all that challenge from high dose C might not work for the sickest patients. Okay, let's moving right along. Vitamin D, that has been front and center in discussions of immunity.
Yeah, vitamin D, you know, it's a bit complex, I have to say. So it's a steroid hormone. So vitamin D, unlike other vitamins, really acts like a hormone. And hormones in our body tend to be very tightly regulated, and they have modulating effects. So they both up and down regulate various bodily processes. And that's true for vitamin D. So it has both immunostimulatory actions, but it also has immune suppressing actions. And that makes it interesting and potentially very very applicable to this, if it could in fact enhance our initial defense to the infection and then downregulate our you know, excessive inflammatory mm-hmm. response to it. And I think there is that potential. That being said, there have been documented instances, again, not in human trials yet, but in animal trials, of vitamin D specifically inducing the levels of some of these inflammatory cytokines that are involved in the sequelae of mm-hmm. this particular mm-hmm. infection. So I don't think we really know exactly how much vitamin D is useful. What I would say at this point is that it appears that we don't want people to be insufficient in vitamin D, and I don't think more is better, so I think that we want people to be sufficient, or maybe in kind of an optimal range, which, you know, is very kind of controversial in and of itself. I tend to, just from my research in oncology, look for people to be between 40 to 60 mm-hmm. nanograms per milliliter as a blood level. At this time, it's really hard to go in and get your blood level tested, so yep. that's not very clinically helpful. So I think that, you know, generally speaking, most people will probably benefit from, say, around 2,000 IUs of vitamin D on a daily basis, and I don't think that's likely to cause a problem.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you throughout the current coronavirus crisis. And now back to our guest, Lise Alschuler. You know, I think some people use the false analogy of a dimmer switch to describe the immune system. They think, okay, you know, we pull it down and it, you know, goes low, and we push it up and it goes high intensity. But what I argue for is that the immune system is like a dimmer switch, but not in just two dimensions, but in, you know, 50 or 100 or 300 mm. dimensions. Mm. So some things may promote immunity. But at the same time, it may be salutary to modulate or balance all these different countervailing dimmer switches on immunity. And really, that's the trick here, is not to go too high, not too low, but it's to be simplistic, say, well, this nutrient is immune enhancing. Oh, we can't use it during certain phases. That may or may not be a workable hypothesis. We have to investigate it.
Right. Yep. Agree.
Which brings us to elderberry, which for some reason has ignited a firestorm of controversy here. And, you know, it's kind of like a tempest in a teapot, I think, because it's a relatively benign agent. But a lot of people say, whoa, you know, watch out for elderberry and coronavirus. What say you?
Well, you know, I may be one of the instigators of the tempest a little bit. What I found interesting, though, is that integrated practitioners are very attached to having elderberry be okay. And I don't think it's a time for attachment, personally. I think we just really need to look at the data. So what we know about elderberry is that in other viral infections, it definitely reduces, like for kind of your typical influenza, upper respiratory tract infection, it reduces the incidence of those infections, it reduces the severity of the symptoms, and improves recovery time. And that appears to be true for most viruses that cause upper respiratory tract infections. We don't, and there's even some data to suggest that elderberry might also have similar effect on lower respiratory tract infections, which is where the COVID-19 illness gets the better of us. So that's really great. What the caution is about is that elderberry in a couple of studies by the same group has been found to increase the level or the immune cell production of certain cytokines, which the virus also upregulates. And those very cytokines are players in this cytokine storm that people have heard about. Mm-hmm. Now, the magnitude of the effect of Sambucus is about the same magnitude of effect that one would get from their immune cells encountering a bacterial, mm-hmm. something called LPS, which is a bacterial kind of fragment or antigen. So it's within the realm of being clinically, yeah, so it's within the realm of being clinically significant. It's certainly not within the realm of the amount of cytokine storm right. that the virus causes. But in my opinion, if I'm looking at that benefit versus risk, I would say if you do not have symptoms of COVID-19, elderberry is your friend, mm-hmm. and it's going to help prevent the infection. If you do have symptoms at that point, even a little bit of extra cytokine is not going to hurt, is not going to help you. Mm-hmm. And I would say, why not take it out of the equation and rely on other things, of which there are many at that point, to try to mitigate the inflammation. So I think the emphasis really switches with symptoms mm-hmm. of the infection to reducing inflammation. So I think elderberry loses its impetus as a really important strategy.
And that's actually kind of plausible, because some of the reports, the latest reports from the front lines, you know, where people are trying to come up with innovative therapies for the sickest patients in the intensive care units here in, you know, New York, Queens, and Brooklyn, are employing fairly high-dose steroids, which is very immunosuppressive, along with certain monoclonal antibody medications that block cytokines, dramatically shut them down. And, you know, in an infection, generally, it's a bad idea to give steroids. It's really thought to be contraindicated, but it actually seems to be panning out. It seems to actually help some patients get off ventilators and survive.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's really a nuanced approach, which I think this virus deserves. I mean, I'll leave it at that.
So what are some of the other plausible agents? You know, say, you know, you're going to take elderberry tea for prevention. But if you come down sick and you're trying to nurse yourself along and you're trying to avoid the calamity of ending up in an emergency room, you know, what are some of the things that you can safely consider taking at home?
So there's several. These are not necessarily in order of importance, but I'll just give you some that I think deserve mention. One is melatonin. Melatonin is another hormone that our bodies make when we're sleeping primarily, and so certainly sleep is important so that we make enough melatonin, but when we take it as a supplement, we really exceed our normal physiological levels of melatonin. And melatonin has been used for a long time in the cancer world for its immune effects. And it has an anti-inflammatory effect. So it has this unique ability to support certain aspects of the immune system, which include various antiviral components, as well as has a very significant anti-inflammatory effect. And in cell studies, melatonin has been shown to specifically inhibit components of this inflammatory reaction to the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So I think, and I should say,
NLRP3 inflammasome pathway.
Right. Yep. and NF-kappa B, the master switch of inflammation. And I think melatonin is also important because it has been shown to be very effective in the lungs, especially reducing some of the oxidative inflammatory distress that the lungs can experience with infection. So I think melatonin is something to consider. It can be dosed anywhere from, you know, 0.3 milligrams all the way up to, in the world of cancer, we use 20 milligrams a night. So there's a really wide and safe dosage range.
It would really be interesting, you know, retrospectively, you're probably treating a lot of cancer patients. I know one of your favorite interventions is to give them high-dose melatonin. It'd be really interesting to survey your population and see if those high doses of melatonin that they've been faithfully taking shielded them from severe infection. You know, eventually, maybe you'll get some feedback as you begin seeing patients again.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And along with that, you know, I also prescribe a lot of isolated or extracted flavonoids. And so I think, you know, along with that melatonin, one of my very favorites, both in oncology and in this instance, is something called quercetin. I have a feeling that quercetin is really going to emerge as a strong player in this particular issue. It's a very unique flavonoid in that it's got very potent viral, antiviral capacities. It inhibits viral replication, and it also inhibits the ability of the virus to institute this inflammatory response in the cells. And it has been used for a long time in naturopathic medicine to minimize some of the allergic responses or the inflammatory responses to allergies, and used in asthma. So we know it works in the respiratory tract.
Some people use it as a steroid bridge to help get people off dependency on steroids.
Yeah, so I have a good feeling about quercetin. We don't know how much we need to take, but, you know, I think that at minimum 500 milligrams, but I think it's, again, very safe. There's really no downside to it, and it's possible to even get up to, you know, a gram or two of quercetin on a regular basis.
There's so many other things to consider.
So many.
You know, I mean, really there's a universe of possibilities, but, you know, let's talk about some of the more plausible ones. Curcumin from turmeric has also been proposed for this. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. Any plausibility of that?
Yeah, you know, curcumin from turmeric is just known as sort of this master anti-inflammatory spice, if you will, and it downregulates this NF-kappa B, this master switch of inflammation in cells. It's been shown to inhibit the NLRP3. So I think there's definitely a role for curcumin. You know, people might think, okay, I'm just going to start eating a bunch of turmeric, and you would have to eat a lot of turmeric spice to get these focused actions.
It's not that bioavailable, yeah.
Right. So, you know, but there's certainly value. There's actually been some work to show that if you take a curcumin isolate and you take it along with taking some turmeric powder, that you absorb the curcumin isolate more effectively. So I think I don't want to diss the importance of whole root turmeric and turmeric powder. I think that the combination of the powder plus the curcumin is probably the most impactful way to get the benefits. And then, you know, this is something that's active in the GI tract, which again is really where the vast majority of our immune system sits and where a lot of this stuff that we're talking about is occurring.
One of the, you know, there are also some things from the traditional Chinese medicine, armamentarium, skullcap, ashwagandha, which is from the Ayurvedic tradition, and astragalus, which is often used in TCM.
And astragalus is as you said, used traditionally as they take the shaved bark and they put it into soups, and so they just eat it. And that's a wonderful way to take astragalus, but of course we have it available in capsule form and tincture form. And this too is an anti-inflammatory plant. It inhibits viral replication of other coronaviruses. So we, you know, at least the cousin of the SARS-CoV-2 we know can be inhibited by astragalus. The nice thing about astragalus too is that it's used in the convalescent stage of upper respiratory tract infections. So it appears to also support the return of optimal lung function post-infection, which is good.
Well, that's very versatile. There's a whole category of medicinal mushrooms, extracts of mushroom mycelium and beta-glucans products, they too might have applicability here, right?
Right. So, you know, mushrooms are complex in that they modulate the immune system. So they upregulate certain aspects of our defensive immune response, but they also help to upregulate the parts of our immune system that say, okay, enough is enough. We've got to quiet things down.
Sort of adaptogenic, to coin a term, right?
Yeah, right. So they have kind of an adaptogenic effect on our immune system. That's true when we use as much of the mushroom as possible. So when we use a mushroom extract, we want to use an extract that is, you know, like a hot water extract, for example, of the fruiting body and or mycelium. What I think we want to probably stay away from in this context are isolated polysaccharides taken out of the mushroom, the beta-glucan by itself, the lentinin by itself. There used to be some products that are no longer available, but they were called PSK and PSP. Those polysaccharides, extracted from, those extracts are a little bit, they lose the adaptogenic aspect. Mm-hmm. So they just turn on the immune system and say, go.
Yeah.
And there's no kind of break put on. So I don't think those are as appropriate. But most of the mushroom products that people encounter will be more of the full complex extraction.
Finally, some cautions on zinc. Because zinc lozenges have been used as a treatment for the common cold, and we used to stick zinc up our noses until we found that it damaged the olfactory nerve and caused people to lose their sense of smell. Zinc has a role to play here, but should we be chugging zinc lozenges?
Well, I do like the idea of zinc lozenges as, within moderation. Too much zinc, again, too much of a good thing is not better. And I think that, just a zinc lozenge, maybe one or three times a day, is actually helpful. The body's, on a cellular level, the main way our cells inhibit viral replication is through zinc. And so we need enough zinc. That being said, a lot of us are deficient in zinc. There's not as much zinc in our soils. So even if we eat plants and nuts and seeds where we get zinc, we may not get as much zinc as we think, and a lot of us don't even eat enough of those plant-based foods. So zinc insufficiency is relatively common. So many of us actually would benefit from getting our zinc levels up to par. But to your point, you know, getting a bunch of it in and just relying on zinc as a sole defense is not indicated.
Okay. Well, there's quite a few other recommendations in your article in Explore. Where can people find some of these resources and access your information?
Yeah, so at the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine, and the website for that is azcim.org. We have a COVID-19 page, and so you can get a link to that article. We also have a very wonderful FAQ page where a lot of people have asked some very important questions, and some really interesting answers are posed on there. There's some videos from some other members of our center talking about everything from stress management to how to keep your house healthy and antiviral. And we have some meditations that are free, and just it's a really great treasure trove. So that's azcim.org.
Awesome. Well, look, I want to congratulate you on, you know, the scrupulousness and dedication that you've shown in researching this area, looking for things that are plausible, but also not adopting willy-nilly a shotgun approach, which may incorporate things that are useless or even harmful. That's the approach we need in integrative medicine, and I think that integrative medicine has a great deal to add to our ultimate story of management of COVID-19. And, you know, I'm very proud to consider you a colleague.
Well, likewise, you are always my favorite interview, because not only you ask really intelligent questions, but I always learn so much from you, and I so appreciate what you do in the world and all the work that you've contributed to integrative medicine as well.
Well, thank you so much, Lise. Really appreciate that accolade from you. That's Lise Alschuler. Thanks very much for joining us, folks. I hope you found it as informative as I did. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman,
As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.